Hello, and a really warm welcome to the 11th edition of Alchemy Film and Moving Image Festival. My name is Alex Wathney, and I am part of the curation team here at Alchemy. You are listening to Sit Down, our ongoing artist interviews project. In this conversation, Ronan McKenzie speaks to artist Baf Okoto.
So, starting from the very beginning, how were your very first days in Accra, Ghana, coming from West London? And how, if so, have those early memories influenced or informed your perspective as an artist?
Wow. Shit, 20 minutes, yeah?
I know. Let's see how we get on.
I mean, you know, like, the interesting thing is... my very first days, like, first time I was in Accra, I was like 6 months old, right? Like, I've been going to Accra since I was born.
Yeah.
So.
But I guess, yeah, I mean, like, your first days when you, because did you move there, back there as a kind of late teenager, early adult?
No, I was secondary school. So,
oh, okay.
I was 13, 14 when I sort of started school in Ghana.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess it was just like any new kid at school, right? Like, you're crashed into like an existing peer group and you're the outsider. That I think is pretty normal.
Yeah.
I mean, there were certain sort of tensions there and sort of moving. And you know, like, leaving behind a lot of stuff, and I was very conscious that London was like the center of the world. Yeah. And I laugh for that now because it clearly isn't. But, you know, but I think colonially, like, there's a lot of remnants of empire that mean that a lot of different facets of global culture meet in London in a very unique way.
So I was
very conscious of leaving that behind. But what I met in Ghana, and, you know, I guess, like, being immersed in, like, my heritage culture and, you know, having the chance to kind of make that home, was something that I didn't appreciate at the time, I don't think, but ultimately, yeah, it's kind of been the thing I've always tapped into culturally, aesthetically. Politically, you know, the wider context of, yeah, the history of, you know, Ghana and Nkrumah coming out of, like, the British kind of colonial situation. All of that is ever present. I guess one thing that was really interesting going to Ghana was, like, you know, that's the first time I heard about Du Bois, as they call him, Du Bois. You know, there's a certain kind of, yeah, and, you know, there's, like, the roundabout near my school was the Sankara Circle, Thomas Sankara. Like, so, you know, suddenly, like, I'm thrust into, without really being conscious of it, you're thrust into kind of a whole history of, like, Pan-Africanism,
yeah,
you know, global diasporic culture, which you're definitely not sort of privy to in London.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
know.
Absolutely. And that's still, I mean, diaspora is such a key theme of your work, isn't it? Or it seems to be.
I mean, of my life, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, the work is the extension of that. But, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think you talk about all the different facets that kind of make up diasporic peoples, right? And you break that down, and inherently, you know, whether you're talking about Armenians in Lebanon or, you know, Somalis in Kenya. Like there's all the Irish in Liverpool. You know what I mean? There's like a story of movement of peoples, and that's the story of humanity. Yeah. So, you know, with that movement, with that kind of expansion, inevitably comes trauma, but also out of that comes what we come to understand as culture.
Yeah.
But it takes like forever. Go on.
Oh, no, sorry. I was going to say, because that kind of brings me on to the next thing I wanted to talk about. Because I was reading the interview that you did with Natal, where you kind of noted that it's relevant to the Armenians and the Irish in America as it is to Black folks. And then I also read about the project you did exploring diasporic Blackness in the Southeast Asian context. So then bringing us onto your latest film project, where I've read that you kind of noted that you hope it kind of hits a chord with whoever watches it and makes them feel a certain way about themselves and where they come from. And I wanted to ask you, how important or productive do you feel it is to draw those parallels between the feeling of diaspora across different cultures?
You know, if I'm honest, I'm just speculating, you know, because I'm not Armenian. You know, I have Armenian friends. You know, and they talk to me about, you know, the genocide and how they and why they're from Syria, you know, instead of Armenia. And I think it was interesting. And that's the thing about, you know, coming up in London, right? Like you're privy to so many of these stories from so many of these different cultures. So yeah, it's me speculating, like knowing those stories and growing up with those other people's stories that are not Black or African, but they are diaspora, you know. Yeah. And watching that and seeing, you know, what that means to them. It's, you know, me speculating about how they might relate to my work is kind of based on that, really.
Yeah. So is that kind of almost a tool of sort of togetherness and coming together with sort of similar experiences and shared experiences?
Maybe. I mean, I think, you know, if people kind of don't get it, then that's fine. That's their business.
Yeah.
But you know, this is, I think the people who have curiosity for cultures will absolutely see things in my work that they can relate to, whether they're from, you know, Guadeloupe or Haiti or Burkina Faso, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess outside of that, you know, as specific as I'm being, I think there's a way that people who aren't of a culture can also recognize the universality in a specific piece of work or a piece of work that speaks to something specific. I think chasing that is a fallacy. But yeah, I mean, I think humanity is an exercise in empathy, isn't it? So yeah, I speculate as to how other people who don't necessarily have that firsthand knowledge of what my work speaks of can find their way in. But, you know, you'd have to ask people who watch it.
Yeah.
but it is a speculation on my part.
Yeah.
But yeah, drawing those parallels, I think there's a lot more around, you know, this, if we care to pay attention, there's a lot more that kind of binds us than makes us different.
Yeah, absolutely. And then kind of focusing in specifically on Blackness, you mentioned the disaggregation of Blackness, and similarly have mentioned the vastness of Blackness and the deeper level to which we sit with our collective cultures as we found ourselves all over the world as Africans. What do you feel is I guess, the sort of issue with this, and how do you aim to respond to this within your work? I guess it's quite a big question, but because there is a lot going on within that, but what does that kind of disaggregation of blackness mean to you, and how does that play out within your work?
I think it's just like a lifetime of unpacking, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, I guess, literally.
That's all I could, you know, I'm not an academic, I don't write papers and stuff, but yeah, like, as you know, there's a real understand, like, you know, when I was a kid, right, when I was a kid in school in Wembley, primary school in Wembley, and I remember there was I remember people were like, you know, this is the 80s, so I'm from Ghana, people were like, where are you from? Guyana, you know, like, there was like an automatic assumption that, like, in the 80s, if you're black, you were West Indian, you were Caribbean, you know. And you know, I think the sort of, and yeah, I mean, the Caribbean influence, the West Indian influence on black British culture is immense and huge and undeniable. And I'm very much kind of, I came up in that. But I think it was quite interesting, kind of, you know, when I talked to my cousins who grew up in America, and they were like, you know, you don't want to draw attention to the fact that you're not like African American, you know.
Yeah.
Unless, like, you know, East Brooklyn, you could be Caribbean, or, you know, there's like pockets, like the Bronx is super Ghanaian or whatever. But yeah, I mean, this tide that pulls us as black folks into like the monolith, right? I mean, even more like now there's like BAME, you know, because it pulls us into, it's like, this is like a thing that is constantly kind of at play in various contexts, both at a micro and a macro level. And, you know, the unpacking that I speak of is really just to kind of breathe and understand that there's like a million different ways you can be black, you know, and that's okay. And if there's no like rapper who's repping your kind of blackness, that's also okay. Like,
yeah,
you know, yeah. Sorry, I think I've forgotten your question.
No, that was great. No, that was, I think that was more than I asked, which is always amazing. And then, kind of on a similar topic, one more question. On the topic of the notions of plurality, you define a process of biomechanic anthropology within your work. Can you just talk to me a little bit about what that means to you and how that manifests?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a long-standing sort of interest in like the body and what one's body is able to do, and how one's body sort of presents what that will mean for you in terms of like quality of life, ease of life, you know, status. And yeah, you know, when I was flirting with like getting into the commercial game, into your game, Ronan, I guess the only things I was really that interested in were kind of like working with clients or musicians in the short form world who were up for me experimenting with different types of like bodily movement, you know, different types of bodily presentation. That's why, you know, my work around sort of polio survivors,
yeah,
and albinos in Tanzania, and you know, and that sort of also connects to like the Capoeiristas, who were my mestres. I used to train with them. before my knees went. all of that, you know, capoeira is born of oppression and, you know, that kind of survival, that survivalism that kind of came out of those plantations in Brazil. But that was like, you know, literally centuries ago now. But then you're talking about polio survivors who are skating around the streets of Accra, you know, trying to earn a living. But then they come together on a Sunday to be like, you know, everybody else who wants to play a bit of football with their mates, you know. But I think it's really interesting with all of these sorts of explorations that come out in different bits of work, that they all sort of speak to kind of how people, different types of Black people, African descended culture, they all speak to kind of how people are regarded, you know?
Yeah.
And therefore how they are able to kind of go about their business, in a way that kind of provides them dignity or not, you know? And sometimes fatally so. So, yeah, I mean, that's the anthropological element of kind of investigating that, is very much kind of, you know, hinges on what one's body can do.
Yeah.
You know, how well can you disguise your melua de compasso as a dance instead of like a training to fight?
Yeah.
You know, how well you can play football if you've got, you know, disfigured limbs from polio. How safe you are playing a game of football if your albino limbs are fetishized and hunted for all sorts of, you know, misguided but traditional beliefs that put your life in danger.
Yeah.
All these things are quite interesting to me.
Yeah, and within that, you kind of touched on a couple of the films that are in the programme. So could you just, yeah, tell me a little bit about why you've chosen the works for this programme and how they kind of speak to you and what the collection is?
Yeah, well, the good people at Alchemy were like, we want to put a programme together. And I was like, all right. But you know, I'm quite you know, aside from what's in the program, the other thing I spent a lot of my time doing was directing and telling long form sort of narratives for initially documentary and then TV drama. So the short works in this program are very much kind of what I was doing in between drama TV drama gigs. Yeah. And also I was doing them because I was interested in sort of playing with all the things we were sort of just talking about, but also different ways of making work, making imagery. TV drama is a very rigid sort of way of doing things, and it's great training. You know, I didn't go to film school or art school, so you know, you have to find your formation somewhere. And that's kind of doing the works, the short works in this program sort of allowed me to kind of work on my sort of aesthetic formation and you know, with some of the sort of green screen visual effects stuff, sort of the technical formation, whilst doing the sort of box standard tele drama stuff gave me, you know, a bit more craft on the on a larger scale. I was just gonna say, I think Leave the Edges is kind of a combination of those two things, those two sort of tracks kind of coming together.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, because I was gonna ask, because even within a couple of the shorter films that you did, specifically in Let's Dance, I noticed a sort of similarity in the plurality of sort of storytelling, even in the sort of way that she is repeated in the screen. And I wondered if that was purposeful or if that was just sort of a kind of happened, because I sort of read it as that repetition that I saw play out in some of your other films, Leave the Edges and some of the others in the program. And so I wondered if that was the repeated movement that she does in Let's Dance was purposeful, or if that was just, I guess, part of the exploration.
No, it was, you know, it was on purpose. I think Eno is a wonderful singer and performer. And when we sort of sat and talked about the track and what she was doing with the track and the band, I mean, you know, it's the whole sort of sound system. But it was very much about her, I think what she brings to like a bunch of talented musicians is a real kind of sense of identity, you know. But yeah, I think we worked with a choreographer called Nandi Babish, who's immense, and we started breaking down kind of elements of movement. I mean, I'm always fascinated by dancers and movement artists, and we did how we could get a sense of scale with not much money. and part of that idea was to kind of one, break down the choreography into elements that kind of are present in the multi-track of, like, you know, what the bass line is doing and, you know, what certain drums are doing. And then, like a multi-track, like we built the visuals up like someone was in a studio layering up a track. That was the idea. And that gave us a visual motif to work with. And I think that, you know, I'm quite interested in what you can do with visual motifs of repetition. Because, you know, physically, it's that thing, isn't it? You know, I'm really interested in, like, sports and athletes and all kinds of, like, different forms of virtuosity. And ultimately, it just comes down to repetition. If you want to be good at something, repeat it a lot. Yeah. And you'll be really good. So I think there's something quite simple and beautiful and profound about repetition that I'm always quite drawn to.
Yeah, and I wanted to also touch on your interest in virtual reality, and, like, sort of how you feel about the VR experience providing further insight and context than sort of traditional film mechanisms and storytelling. Also sort of linking to, again, to Leave the Edges, where there was 4C was one of the words that came up in it that I thought was really interesting, because it's sort of linked to futurism and sort of the whole VR and VFX. I've sort of read as quite futuristic when I was kind of delving deeper into your work. So yeah, I just sort of wanted to talk a little bit about your interest in VR and if there is an element of futurism in that.
Yeah, I mean, the digital revolution, we're in it, right? Like, there's no getting away from that. It's hard to talk about the future of it because I think everyone's trying to guess at it right now. And my next project is going to be augmented reality rather than virtual reality. I think there's something inherently more accessible about AR. And it's just because of how the medium is, it forces the digital kind of to meet the built environment in a way that I think could be quite interesting and more profound for now, you know, where we are now. There's a I've got a long-standing interest in what technology is doing, and I think there's a lot that's kind of converging at the moment, in a really kind of inexorable fashion. Like, you just can't argue that the future's happened right before our eyes, right? You know, where that's going to take us is something I'm really interested in finding out, but not as an observer, but, you know, in terms as somebody who's playing with it.
Yeah.
So in that sense, yeah, I'm very sort of interested in the future of visual mediums, visual technology. Yeah, how much these things will replicate the storytelling tradition that we've had, you know, through traditional cinema, I'm not so sure, but I'm really interested in finding out.
Yeah, because again, there's just a couple more things I wanted to talk about, because within your work, especially within Leave the Edges, I was reading that you have an enjoyment of stillness, and within Leave the Edges, I've really noticed that, and I sort of really appreciated the time that I had as the viewer to sort of take in all the information from all of the different scenes. And I wanted to ask and talk a little bit about that time that is taken and why it's so important to give that time to scenes that may not necessarily be kind of often seen or often appreciated. Sort of the way that you focus the lens, especially in Leave the Edges with the dancer, when we're just seeing her feet and we're seeing her feet for what feels like quite a while in the best sort of sense. And where that kind of perspective came from and how you learned to take time and why that is important to you.
So really, you're on it today, man. I don't know. All right. No, I mean, I don't have to think about this stuff, or let alone articulate. Yeah.
It's one thing I really noticed, and I really don't feel that we get to do, especially when seeing ourselves, I say that as a Black person, portrayed. We're not necessarily often given the time, and I really appreciated that within the works, all of the works that I saw on the program. So I wanted to just talk about that a little bit.
There's a real propensity in sort of commercial filmmaking to just to cut a lot, you know?
Yeah.
And listen, I love a good action film. You know, I hope to make one day, definitely. I want to blow stuff up and do quick cuts, Tony Scott style. But this is not that. I think part of the reason why, you know, Leave the Edges came about because I stepped away from making TV.
Yeah.
Still working on the feature films, but they take forever developmentally to get, you know, scripts right and financing and all that stuff. So, but getting off the TV treadmill means that I could breathe, right? And I think also just really look at the visual language I was interested in. I'm constantly asking myself about cinema and what it means to me. And also, you know, what influences my cinema, my version of cinema. And, you know, when I come up with answers to those questions, it's invariably, you know, photographers like Sebastián Salgado, or painters like Daniele Johannes, or Charlotte Lelodie. You know, those things that are influences that are away from film and just sort of referencing other films, suddenly you just do take time to breathe and take it all in. And you know, watch a still frame. So, you know, I tend to enjoy making what I call moving portraits. And I'm sure not everything I'll do will be that patient. But for now, yeah, that's very much. And the conversations I was having with Yinka, the flamenca in that you were referencing, and Yamaren, the spiritualist who's at the top of the film and at the bookends to the work. She, you know, those conversations were about taking time, you know, taking our time with what we were talking about, that dialogue between lens and subject. It wasn't necessarily anything that was rushed on the day and didn't need to be rushed in the edit either. So,
I think that I just have one last question, kind of encompassing your body of work in this program. I want to ask, obviously, as an artist, making work that will last much beyond your years, how do you feel, or does it influence your work that you're a father, and if so, in what way?
Yeah, legacy, right? I mean, legacy, I think that's in a word. I've been the age I am now, I've been a dad longer than I haven't been a dad, you know? So I can't imagine what it's like not to be a parent at this point.
Yeah. I wondered how it is in terms of like creating work, thinking about, because I was reading on being mentored by John Okomfor in terms of, you know, what is cinema, who is cinema for, thinking about what, when you set out to make a piece of work, who is that for? And I wondered if having children, if kind of thinking about what they're going to grow up seeing, how they see themselves, and those kind of ideas that you innately think about differently because you do have children, I sort of wondered if that was something that I guess maybe was at the front of the mind or at the back of the mind in terms of the work you make.
Yeah, it's a hard one to answer because I can't separate that differently to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think like, you know, when I wasn't a dad, I wasn't making work, you know, I had no real aspirations to make work, you know. So I've been a dad for 21 years now at this point. And my quote unquote career's shorter than that. So
wow, that's
is it? In what way?
Well, I'm not sure. I guess I don't know why it feels somewhat unusual in my mind as we discuss, but I don't really know if it is or isn't.
I think you're right. It is unusual. You know, my friends weren't having kids until much later.
Right.
So I fully appreciate it's not usual. So it means I don't know quite how to answer your question.
Yeah, no.
Absolutely. I mean, I take my kids on shoots and like they get involved in my work and they see stuff I'm making.
Yeah.
And in that sense, you know, not the TV drama stuff, because invariably I'm away in a facility somewhere, but
all
my stuff, you know, you bring it home with you, you're working on it at home, you're reviewing cuts and
absolutely.
And you know, my kids, you know, my lad was holding the boom on that beach in Levy Edges, like he was shitting himself. It was like, I'm scared. Well,
I think I was thinking of it in terms of sort of like art as a practice, making work as an artist can be somewhat a selfish pursuit when it comes to making something that is for one soul and one soul only. So I think being a parent, it's not just your one soul that is in the is at the core of your life. I would imagine, I'm not a parent, so I don't speak from personal experience, but I think it's really interesting to kind of think about having not one at the center of a practice and maybe having others at the center of a practice. Obviously, you know, you were maybe not practicing before the children. So, I mean, don't want to make the conversation about that, but it's just, yeah, I think
there's definitely a whole kind of, like, there's a conversation you're constantly having with your kids, you know, about life, about the world, about the way you see things.
Yeah.
About how they see things, you know.
Yeah.
It's a constant dialogue, and I think it's no different from the other dialogues at play when, you know, when you're making work, particularly when you have a subject that you're conversing with. So in that sense, I think that, yeah, that's kind of relevant, perhaps. But but yeah, I mean, it's really interesting how, as they get older, more cognizant of the world they see around them, I see them asking the same questions I was asking, or that I still ask, and, you know, that motivate me in my artistic practice, right? So suddenly it's, you're having these conversations with your kids, and it's informing your work and the conversations you're having around work. Regardless, yeah, it's hard to separate, it's hard to make distinction.
Yeah.
But I will say that it's, you know, I enjoy that, and that's one of the things I've really enjoyed since I stepped away from TV, to focus on the artistic practice, is like, you know, really just talking about the world and the formation of, you know, politics, culture, everything that's kind of going on, in life right now, you know, in a way that feels more relevant to my children. Whereas, when I was in a more commercial space and working for hire, that wouldn't really happen.